Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome into 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman. And as always, I'm excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. And I've been holding on to a couple of questions from you all out there on the internet that I wanted to get to at a perfect time like right now, where the team has just finished this terrible road trip. They're about to come home and probably continue to lose. There are people talking about 120 lost seasons and all of that. And so now is a good time to get into these questions I've got from all of you about ownership, about management, and about, to try to end on a fun one, I do want to talk a little bit about the broadcast team because I was asked about it. But let's take a very wide angle look at where the Colorado Rockies are right now. And I do want to do a little bit of something that I've never really done before, which is dive deeper into what would it even look like if Dick Monfort did wake up one day and decide, yeah, okay, fine, I'm going to sell the Colorado Rockies. So let's do all of that. But first, I'm really excited to tell you about a new partner we've got, BetOnline, the number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, the NHL playoffs, and more. They've got all the latest stats, news, scores available for you right there for your favorite teams, so you don't have to go to any other website to check it out. Get all the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchup, players, props, odds on just about every sport out there. So go to the website today, bet online, use your mobile device, get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. And if you are a betting person, I must begin the next part of our conversation by saying I would not. Look, let's have a little bit of fun today. And some of this might not be as fun as you would think, imagining what it would be like to sell the Colorado Rockies. But I do want to make sure that I begin by saying, as always, this isn't going to happen. This is almost certainly not going to happen, and there is almost no mechanism. And I know people don't like hearing this. There are some people who believe that boycotts might work. I don't know. It's, in my estimation, never worked before, with the possible exception of what's going on in Oakland, and is that really what you want for your franchise? So I did get this question, though, that has a lot of elements to it that I wanted to use to bounce off of. So Rox Fountains says, there's all this sell the team talk, but what exactly would change? Isn't the real issue bad contracts, free agent pitchers avoiding Denver, scouting and analytics investment? And then Rox Fountains finishes by saying, Cattlemen need to let baseball people do the baseball stuff. But do we really want non-Colorado owners threatening to move? So I really love this question because there's like 10 questions actually in it, right? Let me go a little bit backwards through this because it goes from, I think, the biggest question down to more specific things here. So do we really want non-Colorado owners threatening to move? Again, I want to preface this by saying this is incredibly unlikely. This is not something that I think, even if we're willing to live in the dreamland where Dick Monfort wakes up one day and just decides he's going to sell to the highest bidder, and the highest bidder does happen to be somebody not from Colorado, I think the chances that they would move the team are incredibly slim. So I have often said in the past, now, you know, be careful what you wish for on that, because it is possible. I just did the Oakland thing a moment ago, right? That is a worst case scenario where, you know, somebody would come in and decide that they want to move the team to some other, but here's the reason why this won't happen. I'm already jumping to the end, so let me just get there. there really isn't another place that is an obvious better market to move the team to. As most of you listening to this know, one of the things that is a bit unique and difficult to deal with the Rockies' struggles is that, unlike when other teams are terrible and the ballparks are empty, when the Rockies are terrible, there's still a decent number of people. I've heard the numbers before, but I was still absolutely stunned, y'all, when they were given the numbers for attendance in Miami. You're talking 8,000 people, you know, right? And on a cold, rainy Wednesday afternoon ball game, when school is still going on, you'll get 18,000 people at Coors Field, right? And that, to any prospective buyer, is just going to be a tough situation to beat. As a lot of people recognize, you know, and I think it's oftentimes overblown, people will say, oh, that's the reason why Dick Monfort doesn't care about being any good, because he's always going to make money anyway. Now, if your real goal is to just maximize how much money you're making, you're going to make way more money if you can fill all those seats for a good team. It's also worth noting that these days, ticket sales tend not to be the top revenue driver for owners. It's more often than not things like TV deals and licensing and stuff like that. But ticket sales is absolutely part of it. And then merchandise sales, and then you can sell a lot more merch if you're getting more people in the building, and you can sell a lot more $13 beers and stuff like that, right? And so there should be an incentive to get even more people in the building because more people will come out. But yeah, that is the main reason, this unique situation that we have here. There's also the part where, like, when you look at the map, right, the Rockies really are the only team in the area, in a pretty wide sweeping area out here in the mountain zone, as it were, right? And so a lot of people who live in Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, I mean, they do a Nebraska football day down at Coors Field, right? And that's part of the regionality. I don't know if that's a word, but I think you know what I mean, of the ball club. And so while it is always worth a little bit of a caution, because you could end up with a situation, you never know what uber rich people want to do, right? And you could end up with the kind of situation like what happened in the NBA, where the Seattle Supersonics were a successful team for a long time, actually. So it's a little different there. But the owners were from Oklahoma, and they wanted to move the team there. And it was as much a personal desire. And as we know, right, sometimes rich people own sports teams and they play with them like toys. And so it's not an impossibility. It would not be a wise business decision to move the Colorado Rockies. That's just plain and simple. On top of the excellent deal that they've got for that ballpark, so not only do I not think the Colorado Rockies are probably ever likely to move out of the state, I don't know that they're ever going to move from that spot. I think they will stay at Coors Field at least for the next, you know, 50 foreseeable future, right? It's going to be a long time before they're out of there. However, and I'm speaking to and with and probably not for several Broncos fans here. Now, when I say you can sell a team, also to Mets fans, and get a great owner or a great group of owners who say all of the right things, spend all of the right money, or at least spend a lot of money. Spending the right money tends to be, you know, an issue, right? And obviously we know what the Broncos just went through with Russell Wilson. And, you know, lots of debates now over there about whether or not what they're doing at quarterback now is a reluctance to fully commit to a rebuild. Are they convincing themselves that they're better than they are? Or are they going to take a longer term approach? A very similar conversation to what we're having over here with the Rockies, right? But I think sometimes people think that when you've got a bad owner, if they sell to somebody that says all the right things and spends a bunch of money, that you're necessarily going to get better. Now, in the case of the Broncos, they went from having an all-time legendary top of the mountain, if I may use a Colorado pun, one of the greatest owners in the history of professional sports, to a group of people with a lot of money who are trying hard, right? Now, with the Mets, they went from a disaster, like a legal financial disaster. Like there are movies made and books written about elements of the crime that was going on behind the scenes, over there with the Mets organization, to this Steve Cohen guy, who again is like, I'm going to use a weird example for those of you that don't follow professional wrestling. It's kind of like Tony Khan, right? You've got a lot of money and you say a lot of the right things and you start out with all of the right intentions, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're immediately going to be better. But again, we're imagining fun things today, so let's think about what this might look like. Whether the owner is from Colorado or not, let's say they come in with the best of intentions, no concept of moving the team whatsoever. They say all the things we want to hear them say. I'm going to invest in this team. And now I want to get into a little bit more of the rest of this question from Rocks Fountains. Isn't the real issue bad contracts, free agent pitchers avoiding Denver, scouting and analytics? Yes, which is to some extent related absolutely to the owner and the other part of this that we haven't really talked about yet, which is, of course, the front office, the management. How loyal is he to those people? How qualified are those people? And that's the conversation that is ongoing. And I understand that I fight an uphill battle when I try to convince people what I truly believe is going on down there, which is that they've committed to a rebuild and they aren't saying it and they aren't executing it flawlessly either. There are several things that I would take issue at inside of that rebuild, including pinch hitting for young players late in games. A lot of it, honestly, kind of related to the coaching staff, which ultimately, you know, in rebuilds, those tend to turn over by the time you get to the point where the next core of the team is here. The same way that, you know, before that run in 17 and 18, a lot of those guys had played for Walt Weiss, right? And a completely different coaching staff. Trevor Story's rookie season, which was an absolutely fantastic year, right, was under Walt Weiss. The first several years for Blackman and Arenado and so on and so forth. And I think that's likely to end up being the case with the coaching staff. And I'll get back to that in a minute. But as far as this analytics thing goes, this is the issue that I press the team on the hardest. It is the thing when I'm down there and I have the opportunity to ask questions of Bill Schmidt and Dick Monfort. It's always what I ask about. What are you doing to improve the analytics department? Because I personally believe it is the only possible answer to the dilemma that plagues this team that I believe is very, very true and real, the Coors Field conundrum, whatever you want to call it. There is a unique way of playing baseball when half your games are at Coors Field, and the team needs to be built to combat that. And in order to do that, you need really smart people with really good tools doing a whole lot of research. And so for me, the best thing that any potential new owner could do is come in and say, I am going to invest an extraordinary amount of money into the analytics department. We're revamping that entire thing. We're tripling the size, quadrupling the size, whatever it is, and giving those folks all of the resources that they need in order to do the work that they need to do. All of that said, I think if you did that from an ownership standpoint, the answer that you would get would look very similar, maybe not exactly the same. If you were playing it 100% by the numbers in the books, you wouldn't have brought back Charlie Blackman this year. I think most people recognize a little bit of human heart. That's a unique situation. It's different for Charlie, but yes, a move like that doesn't scream rebuild. But I think if you're looking at everything else they've done, from the veterans that they traded last year to the types of moves that they've made in the draft to the way that they've tried to build the farm system to playing guys like Ezekiel Tovar and Brenton Doyle through very difficult times, calling up Jordan Beck and playing him every day instead of, you know, putting him on the bench or whatever, despite the fact that he's struggling a little bit. Again, I don't like pinch hitting for him at all, but there are those counterexamples. I think part of the issue with the rebuild is, if it's not at an A-plus all the time, if it's not a 100% everything is about the rebuild, then people are going to say that it's not happening at all. Right now, I think they're executing this rebuild at about a B-minus clip, you know, and there are certain things that they're not doing well in terms of the rebuild, but I also think it's pretty clear that they're rebuilding. And I also think that any new ownership or any new GM would come in and come to that same conclusion that, you know, I get the frustration of watching the games and the ugliness of it, but I do not believe, I just don't, that it's reasonable to think that a team that lost 103 games last year could or should be trying to win 78 this year. You know, that doesn't help you. And I think a lot of people might be less angry. Certainly there would be a lot less, you know, extremely negative press and talk about 120 losses and all of that. But it's just not better for your team to be mediocre. Unfortunately, you know, that's just the way of professional sports now, that there's no incentive to win a handful more games when you've got this many issues and you're building toward the future. It actually helps you to have road trips like they just did, where several young guys played well, several key players played well. Laurys Montero hit a big home run. Jordan Beck gets to make his debut and get his feet wet a little bit. Feltner looked fantastic at times. Austin Gombrich had a nice game in there. And then maybe some of these veterans that you might be able to trade at the deadline. Jacob Stallings might be looking really attractive to a contender out there right now, right? And then, but you're also not an... I know some people don't like looking at it this way, but you're not hurting your draft stock either, because as much as I think the Rockies farm system is better than it's been getting credit for the last year or two, it's also true that they don't have enough pitching. Even if they hit on all of Dolander, Sullivan, Palmquist, they still need a few more of those names. They've got the number 3 pick in this upcoming draft. There's some really intriguing pitching that I think could dramatically improve that right away. I think you get one more of those, and then you're talking about a team that in a couple of years won't just have that 1 or 2 year window, but can actually maybe open up a 5 to 6 year long window where they're competing every season, because it's not just built around Freeland, Gray, and Marquez, right? And then you see what you can get at the bottom, and then when guys get hurt and everything falls apart, and then your star's unhappy, and then boom, everything explodes, right? You need more pieces, more depth, and the best way to get it for a team that struggles in free agency and that doesn't have the biggest budget and even, yeah, has the reputation that they do, is to get it through drafting and developing. And I think any new GM worth their salt would come in and tell you exactly that. But that gets us back to something I alluded to a moment ago. I don't necessarily think that no changes are coming. And so Trevor asks, what is the holdup on Bud Black's contract extension? Yeah, this is an interesting one, because the last several years, they had announced during spring training an extension, and a lot of the details of Buddy's contract aren't actually public, which is interesting. But I don't know, and I don't want to speculate too much, but I think that in and of itself does signal an interesting change. And I know Bill Schmidt just recently went on record and gave Buddy the full vote of confidence, as it were. And I don't think that Buddy needs to be fired in some angry, you know, it's your fault, the team is terrible kind of way. I ultimately think he will probably manage out most of this season anyway. However, I don't think it's automatic that he's the manager of this ball club next season. And in fact, I don't think it's automatic that any of these coaches are back, for a myriad of reasons. Unfortunately, I think the one that's most important, or the one that's least important, I should say, is the one that will end up being the deciding factor, which is just the general change of mood, change of scenery. It'll feel like big change, even though in my mind, you know, the far more important thing is what's going on in the farm system, what's going on in the front office, what's going on with analytics. Can they get a deep enough, quality enough group of players to come up and make the team better for several years? I have always believed there's kind of a pretty intense limit to like what a hitting coach, what a pitching coach, what a manager really does to help these guys develop. You know, it's always interesting to me when, you know, you'll use an example of one guy having a really bad season and be like, well, the Rockies failed to develop him. I was like, well, what about the guy who's having an incredible season? It's always a little bit of a whack-a-mole process to figure out. And I do think it ultimately ends up coming down to the player themselves. But they're not nothing, right? Those guys aren't around for no reason whatsoever. And I do think that generally speaking, from the ground up or from the top down, I guess, however you want to look at it, they need a new approach. They need a new philosophy. They need new words in the ears, that even just the sayings, whatever it is, right? They do need that change. Again, I don't think it's going to change anything to do it now. I don't think it matters. Again, I'm very much of the mind that you play out the season, play the young guys as much as you can. I would like to see them do that a little bit more. Maybe that would be the biggest reason if you were going to make a change to do it now. But I also think there's not a ton of harm in just clearing house in the off season and kind of going back after it at that point. And, you know, yeah, a lot of people in my line of work, we like Bud Black because he's really easy to talk to. He's very kind. And I do often, you know, wonder about who out there is going to have a better plan of attack for Colorado Rockies pitching, because there was that short period of time in 17 and 18. Those are some of the best rotations and bullpens the Rockies have ever had. Again, how much of that is just the talent that they had on the roster at the time, and then how much of that is being guided by somebody who's got a pretty great mind for pitching. But as we move into a new generation of baseball and a new generation of Rockies, I think that just ultimately one way or another, whether it's that the Rockies have to fire him or maybe he retires, or, you know, it just, as we talked about, since there's no contract extension, it just kind of expires in the offseason. The parties go their separate ways, probably after back-to-back 100 loss seasons. So it's not like anybody is going to look in and go, oh my God, I can't believe it, right? As much as I don't think most of this is quote unquote his fault, I do just think that as a part of everything else, it's going to be changed. And then, like I said, I kind of want to end it on this fun one at the end here, though. I'm going to make a little bit about everything. Norm asks, how would you rate our broadcast team? I've watched several games, Tigers, D-backs, Dodgers, Angels, Mariners, a few others, all in my opinion, much better than the Rockies. I do enjoy Spilly and Mark Stout. You know, this one is always interesting to me because I think every fan base is harsher on their own broadcasters because you know more and you care more about your team. I'll give you an example. I know a lot of people really hate the Drew Goodman call, like it's going to be a home run and then it's caught at the warning track thing, right? That becomes a thing. But if you're an opposing fan and you're only watching three, or let's say you're a divisional fan, right? You're a Padres fan. No, I'm sorry. I just called you a Padres fan. I didn't mean that. and you know, you're going to watch six or nine Rockies games a year or whatever it may be. If you watch all of them, then awesome for you. But right, you probably won't even hear them do it once, right? Home run calls. You know, almost everybody's got a signature home run call. And if you watch 162 games, your guy's call is probably going to get old, right? I think the TV and radio guys do a pretty good job. And I think they've got one of the hardest jobs in the game because they've got to bring the energy and talk about this team that is really bad right now and has been for a lot of their existence, and on a daily basis, find interesting things to talk about, find fun things to talk about, try to make the game entertaining for the people who are watching. You know, when they're down 16-2, Drew Goodman and Jeff Hewson and Jack Corrigan and Jerry Schimmel, they can't just turn the game off. They can't just up and leave, right? They got to sit there and call every pitch. You're down 16-2 in the fourth. Well, guess what? We've got a couple more hours of calling this game, talking about whatever, you know. And so I think it's a tough gig to begin with because the nature of being a play-by-play slash color team really over the last two decades has become much more about being a homer for your team, not really criticizing the team too much. And I think that's another thing that tends to really get under fans' skin. Like, if you're watching a Mariners game and you're not a Mariners fan, you may not care that much that they're not criticizing the Mariners because you don't need that, right? That thing. But this is why I like challenge people to watch other teams' broadcasts. Or I think a really good thing to do is spend a couple of days, if you're a message board person or you're a Twitter person, whatever, wherever you interact, right? Go to the message boards or the Twitter feeds of Reds fans and Royals fans and whatever other teams that are really struggling and look at the similar ways that they talk about their manager, their owner, their players, right? These kinds of repeated things. And so I think it's easy to get caught up in feeling that, you know, your team is the worst, your broadcast team is the worst, your owner is the worst, and especially, especially in a season like this, right? Where it's just, man, what do you, it's tough to make this fun for people, believe me. I know. You know, here I am trying to entertain you on a podcast. I've talked for almost a half an hour about a ball club that for the foreseeable future, for the next several weeks, months, for the rest of this season, just isn't going to be playing a good brand of baseball. And what we do have to talk about are the little in-between things. What did Montero do today? Is Doyle still hanging in there at the plate? What can Nolan Jones do when he comes back? All of those kinds of stuff. And then watching a whole heck of a lot of minor league baseball and diving deep into things like the draft, because that is what this team is about right now. But to recap on all of this, I think it's nice to wonder what it would be like if Dick Monfort sold the team. And I think there's a possibility that if that did happen, that a lot of things could get a lot better, especially the investment in analytics. I don't think it's anywhere near likely, but I do think a change is on the horizon. And while we've gone through, like I said, with the Broncos, Mets, whether it's ownership changes, GM changes, head coach slash managerial changes, at the end of the day, ultimately, when push comes to shove and the chips are on the table and all of those other cliches, the games are won and lost between the lines by the people with the ball in their hands. And while I do appreciate these conversations from time to time, the reason I only have them every once in a while, like I'm doing now and under the guise of questions from you all, is because for me, you know, and to get back to a very specific thing and end on this right here, you know, I'm doing all this reporting on Jordan Beck right now. Got the video out there, a little bit of article. We're tweeting, we're talking about Jordan Beck. A couple of base hits, whole bunch of strikeouts, okay? Small sample size. We're talking about Jordan Beck. And I would say 90% of the replies to my videos, my tweets, my articles, whatever, are doesn't matter, Rockies are going to ruin him. Or he's going to be great and they're going to trade him, right? And that for me is where an inability to let go of these other conversations and recognize that right now, What happens with Jordan Beck is about Jordan Beck. He's a person, right? I remember when Drew Romo was drafted and there were all these incredible reports, all these incredible skills, and everybody in the local media says, doesn't matter, he's going to be bad because high school catchers don't pan out. But Drew Romo isn't just high school catcher number 286949. He's a person. And so I will continue to focus on the people and the individuals, because however terrible Jeff Breidich was at everything that he ever did in his life, while he was the head of development for the Colorado Rockies, they developed the greatest third baseman to ever walk the face of the planet. Was that because of the leadership and guidance of Jeff Breidich and Bill Schmidt? Or was it just Nolan Arenado turned out to be really freaking good? And that really helped the team for quite some time. It has happened before, and it can happen again. Thank you all for listening into whatever this was. I hope it was as much fun for you as it was for me. I had a good time. Thanks for listening. Make sure you're checking out everything Mile High Sports on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all that good stuff. And of course, milehighsports.com for all that written content. Other than that, I can only ever ask that you continue to be absolutely awesome out there. You know that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.